Tonight Talk starts right now. And welcome to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU Tonight. Tom Wheeler is our host. We welcome your contributions. Once Tom opens the phone lines, give us a call at 826-4805, or if you're out of the area, toll free at 800-640-5911. And we also accept text messages at 492-KHSU.
All right, welcome to Thursday Night Talk. And this is a very fun and special episode for me. We're talking about Bigfoot today, our favorite forest mammal of the Pacific Northwest. And a little backstory on how I arrived at this episode. I am in another life the executive director of Epic, and one of the critters that we work on is the Humboldt Martin, which is a small mustelid, a weasel. And there are less than 100 left in California. And one day at the bar, I was drinking and talking loudly about the Humboldt Martin, and a guy behind me says, "Well, I've seen one of those." And a lot of people think that they've seen a Humboldt Martin. It's often mistaken for fishers or long-tailed weasels or a lot of other little critters, ringtail cats. And so I said, yeah, sure you did. Where'd you see it? Well, I saw it in Bluff Creek out in Humboldt County. All right. Actually, yeah, you may have seen a Humboldt Martin. What the heck were you doing out in Bluff Creek? Well, I was out there looking for Bigfoot. And that was a shock to me. And so then I became friends with Jamie. He shared a lot of the trail cam footage that he had of the Humboldt Martin, not of Bigfoot. And I kept that with myself for a while, and I've been thinking about Bigfoot. And later, I was talking to a scientist, a real deal scientist with a federal government agency, and we were talking about the Humboldt Martin. And then I told him about this Bigfoot story about finding Jamie at the bar, and this guy gets real quiet and he goes, "Well, I also believe in Bigfoot. You can't really tell that many people, but because it's not okay to believe in scientific circles, but." Yeah, I've been out in the woods too many times and have experienced too many weird things to not believe in Bigfoot. So I felt like there had to be a story in here. And luckily, I have two of the preeminent Humboldt County Bigfoot researchers with me. We have Rowdy Kelly and Robert Leiterman in the studio. Welcome, guests.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having us here.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So 16% of Americans believe in this woodland creature. Why are you interested in Bigfoot?
Well, we'll make mine short and sweet. I got thrown into the Bigfoot world through Bigfoot Productions. So I've produced a few Finding Bigfoot shows. And in turn of what I do, I'm a location scout for the county. I've worked on a lot of big movies since 2001. And in my endeavors, I've come across Mr. Leiterman, who was a ranger at Humboldt Redwoods in my course of scouting for movies. And in turn, I also found out that he was the Bigfoot ranger. And I had Finding Bigfoot come in 2011. And I'd already worked on a Bigfoot horror movie. But anyway, I talked to Robert and I said, they want to go out to this place called the Patterson-Gimlin site, which is the famous 1967 film of a supposed Bigfoot walking across a sandbar in Bluff Creek. And the show wanted to go there. And Robert said, "Yeah, we got a BFRO expedition that's happening." And
what is BFRO?
Bigfoot Research Organization.
Okay.
Yeah, and they put on these expeditions a couple of times a year. And he said, "Yeah, come on out with me, and you can go down to the site with me," or what we thought was a site. And it kind of started from there. That was a week before Finding Bigfoot came to town. And then I was just completely inundated with Bigfoot stuff after that. And I joined up with Robert and Steven in search of this elusive spot of where it actually happened, where the film was shot in 1967. And at the time, I didn't think it was that important. But since then, since we've done all the grid plotting and found the site and made sure it was a real place, it's become an interesting factoid about Humboldt County. It's the second most viewed amateur film ever, behind the Kennedy assassination. And so it just kind of gained momentum with me and popularity, and I've taken, I don't know, 3 or 4 different TV shows down there and in production. And, we've taken lots of people's, but Robert has a little more in-depth history about Bigfoot. It goes back quite a few years. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it started as a kid being forced to go to some drive-in movie theater called Legend of Boggy Creek back in the 80s, I guess.
Boggy Creek, yeah.
Boggy Creek, but I guess part of the 80s. Anyhow, I was pretty scared, kind of scared that, you know what, and especially when you had to go to the bathroom, you had to walk in the dark all the way to the bathrooms. Of course, everybody doesn't know what a drive-in movie theater is anymore. But
yeah, you have to explain those to
yeah, you drive in your car, you put a speaker in your window, you turn up the volume, and you watch this big screen 300 yards away. But anyhow, so that got me started on that. And it wasn't until probably college when I started doing more research on it, here at HSU, actually, the recreation department, graduate class of 86. Anyhow, so I was pretty much trying to figure out what was going on, and I just read. It wasn't until about 1999 that I kind of got suckered in. It was at Humboldt Redwoods, park ranger there. This guy shows up. He's got this pickup truck with this big old speaker in the back, kind of the speakers you see on ships. And on it said BFRO. It was John Freitas. He was one of the BFRO researchers. And so he shows up on Labor Day weekend at one of the park, one of the busiest times of the year, and he wants to blast this speaker into the wilderness so get a Bigfoot to call back. We're like, I don't think so.
You need a special permit for that, sir.
Well, yeah. I don't think they issue those.
Yeah.
You have the marble murrelets, and there's a quiet time. There's a nesting period, and it's still going on. And you can't just go out on a busy holiday blasting sounds 3 miles into the wilderness. So I told them no. But they were there to investigate a Bigfoot sighting. A gentleman had reported it about a month earlier. He was with his son across from the campground. He went for a walk. Son's shoe was untied, so he told the son to tie his shoe. So while the son was bent over tying his shoe, the dad was just looking around. And that's when the dad reported seeing a half-naked individual from the waist up, hairy, moving back and forth between a gap in the trees, stops, rubs his back against a tree. And that's about the time he got his kid out of there. So they went back about 5 minutes later to check and saw nothing. They reported to the, asked questions to the camp people there, asked if they had bears. They said, oh, no bears in the woods here. So fast forward, here comes the Bigfoot research guys out looking around. So it was that exposure to that. I went up, after they left, I went to investigate it myself because I was kind of curious about it. So I went up there, based on a photograph, found the exact spot, went up the hillside, found where they, where the researchers left their camera strap to this camera and a cigarette bud. And they were not quite right about what happened there. They said it was this alleged creature was rubbing against a stump. Well, the stump still had moss on it. It was a burnt stump. But there was a tree nearby that had been rubbed. So that got me involved. So I did my own little investigation. I wrote it up just to tell them they were wrong. And then within about 3 weeks of submitting my article, I had Matt Moneymaker, the guy in charge of the BFRO, Bigfoot Field Research Organization, ask if I want to be a curator. So it's like, well, what's that? Well, you just follow up on reports and you just do some stuff. I said, sure, I'll do it. And that's when I drank the punch. And I've been involved in expeditions, other research aspects, videography, locating the film sites. I should say relocating it. Yeah, so I've been involved with quite a few things since then. That was 1999. And here we are today in a studio talking about it.
All right, so what do we talk about when we're talking about Bigfoot? Is this the same as Yeti? Is this the same as the abominable snowman? What is this creature that we talk about? Is there a kind of a standard definition within Bigfoot research circles of Bigfoot?
That's interesting. Almost every continent, not counting Antarctica, has stories of bipedal primates, large individuals with large feet walking around covered with hair. Every place has a different name for it. Bigfoot is kind of the California term for it. And no matter where you go in terms of looking for Sasquatches or Bigfoots, there's a lot of similarities. Some talk about five toes or three toes. Some talk about different color hair. Some talk about different locations. So I guess you could throw them all into one lump sum and say there's a bipedal primate type creature living in the woods, but there's been reports in deserts.
And in mountains for the abominable snowman?
Oh, the Himalayas?
I don't really know. You probably know better than me.
Well, there's always stories about that because there is a bear that lives up there, and a lot of them report as a bear. There's also some old words that they use to describe the Yeti, which also mean large animal or large bear. So I've never seen one. But there's how these stories that people describe these animals. And sometimes they describe them as a bear, sometimes they describe them as a bipedal creature. So I guess you could say it's up to the individuals.
Yeah, this is still one of those subjects that's just based on witness accounts. I don't think there's any expert on whether, you know, the difference between a Yeti and a supposed Bigfoot in Northern California. And that's the problem with the science of Bigfoot right now. There is no science of Bigfoot. We don't have any tangible evidence. We don't have a body. We don't have really any DNA as of yet. But we just have all these incredible witnesses. I mean, between Robert and I, I'm sure we've talked to, just working on the show myself, I've talked to so many supposed credible witnesses. You know, people that you would say, yes, you're telling me something that you saw looked like a Bigfoot, and I believe you, or you're an outdoorsman enough to know the difference between a bear and something that's standing up and walking on 2 feet.
So, Rowdy, have you had any Bigfoot experience?
I would be lying to say that I didn't. No, I have not seen one. Uh-huh. But I have been in a situation on a top of a mountain where me and one other gentleman definitely heard what is described as a Bigfoot howl. Uh-huh. At fairly close range. And that's about the extent of it for me.
All right. So maybe if you wouldn't mind to recreate the Bigfoot howl, maybe take a large kind of is that Robert's?
No, Robert, you practice this a lot more than I do.
You might blow out the microphone. It's the one that he does. Sit back a little bit.
Yeah, I tell you what, I'll go outside and then I'll just keep the window cracked open and you can probably hear it. There's a lot of calls that alleged Bigfoot calls because it's like you get a piece of hair and what do you have? You have a piece of hair. If you have a follicle on it, maybe get some DNA out of it. But it means nothing if you have nothing to compare it with. So you find all the hair you want, but you have to match it with some creature, right, to know where it came from. So it's a legend, so you don't know. So let's say you're out like John Freitas was with these big old ship speakers on his truck and recording devices recording these calls. So you broadcast these calls for miles. On some quiet nights, it does go that far. And you get this response you get back. So you're assuming it's a Sasquatch call, but you don't know for sure. So with that said, I'll do what's called the Ohio Howl. And okay. I'll back up. I want to.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe take a couple steps back and I'll let our producer get ready for it. All right, he's ready. Here it comes.
Wow, that was impressive, Robert. That was one of the longer ones I've heard.
So. That's a feat. I don't know if I could do that with my lungs. So I've read about all the different calls that people experience. There's chattering. There's something kind of guttural
Samurai talk.
What's samurai talk?
Samurai talk is what you watch the kung fu movies.
Oh no.
Well, in English captions, it says what they're saying, but this sounds like, oh,
yeah.
Well, they call that samurai talk, and there's been some recordings for that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and again, that's speculative, but that's the language of the creatures.
So this BFRO, yeah. Does it have a kind of a suppository or a publicly accessible database of these things? Could I go somewhere and listen to, you know, if I'm a mammalogist and I think that I can help in the process, is there somewhere for me to go and listen to these various calls that have been recorded?
Well, Google it.
No. Google it?
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's available just by Googling, like Sasquatch calls or Sasquatch screams. Uh-huh. But the BFRL Field Research Organization does a lot of follow-up reports, and they get recordings. They do expeditions where they record different sounds. There's members across the whole United States that go on expeditions, and there's some really good guys with recording devices who've done a very nice job of screening out all the outside noises, getting these clear calls. Uh-huh. And so there's a lot of calls out there, but the question always comes, is it a distant coyote call? Is it something else? Is it a call that was made and echoed off the canyon and some owl responded to it and called back? And then some other animal heard that call and responded to it, so you get this delayed call back. So I don't want to be a downer on it, but I just...
Right,
you know.
Yeah, no.
But yeah, so you got these calls, don't know what they really mean, so... You go out in the woods, right, and you got this big old ghetto blaster, and you're blasting all these sounds out in the woods. As far as you know, it is saying, hey, I'm available, or up yours, or whatever. And next thing you know, you have this visitor in the middle of the night, and they're not happy.
Yeah.
So you don't know what you're really saying.
Yeah, right. It's the dangers. It's the dangers of Bigfoot research. All right. So do either of you have let me first say, this is a call-in show. I'd love to hear people's stories if they have any of Bigfoot encounters. Frankly, I don't think that we need the skeptics to call in because that isn't terribly fun. So if you want to call in, if you have a good Bigfoot story, call on in. It's 826-4805 or 1-800-640-5911. Or if you have a question for us, text it in at 492-KHSU. All right.
I want to go ahead and lead into, you know, what Robert and Jamie and Stephen and I have been doing the past 7 years. And it was definitely stimulated by trying to find the famous 1967 Patterson-Gimlin site and make sure that was the location. There was not a consensus in the Bigfoot community on where the site was. So
let me just interrupt you really quick. So the three of us, we get to look at this photo, a blow up of the film. Can you describe?
Yeah, this is a very famous picture. It's called frame 352 of the Patterson-Gimlin film. And it's the quintessential Bigfoot pose that just about every Bigfoot organization or little toy trinket or whatever is based on. And it supposedly is a female Bigfoot because she does have breasts, and she's walking across a just recently flooded creek bottom, and this man named Roger Patterson and his sidekick Bob Gimlin were actually out looking for this creature. And after a couple of weeks of being out there, I happened upon getting this film. And it's actually shot on 16mm film. It's about 58 seconds worth of footage that we have of this creature. And, you know, there's lots of controversy around it. And there's no definitive proof on whether it's real or whether it's a costume. If it is a costume, I'm in that realm because I'm in the film industry. If it is a costume for 1967, it's a really good one. It's got a lot of really good subtleties to it. You can see muscles. You can see really nice glistening hair. Obviously, the breast and the movement of the creature is very fluid and dynamic.
I'd like just to run off that. Bill Munns has done some serious investigation on that costume aspect of it. He's a special effects for 30 years, Hollywood stuff. And he did some studies. One of his studies, I know you'll love to hear about this one, is he paid women to bounce around to see if
to walk
that matched.
Yeah.
the movement of what the creature would be doing. Uh-huh. He got a grant to do that, and I'd like to know.
He got a grant?
Yeah, well, he got some money to study the bounce of the breast in comparison to the Patterson-Gimlin film. And the idea was that if it was a costume, what kind of material was used to make such a convincing breast substance or structure or movement. And he's put out a book, When Roger Met Patty, I think is the name of the book.
Got me.
Anyway,
that.
It's pretty good investigative work on his part, be it maybe a little bit biased, but he went through and did a lot of experiments. We took him to the site actually in 2012. And that was the time we took quite a few people down there on this big expedition, and it was basically to bless the site, for them all to say, yes, this is the consensus, this is the site. And because we had discovered quite a few things that are, if you look at frame 352, there's a lot of artifacts in that frame, which include fir stumps, trees in the background, maple trees, fir trees, a lot of downed wood. And over the course of this past, actually that first summer, we actually found quite a few of those artifacts. I think it was around 32 matching artifacts.
Yeah, we ran out of alphabets to mark them, as you can see on the chart there.
Yeah. So let's get back to that in one sec. We have a caller, Michelle from Garberville.
Hi.
Hi, Michelle. Do you have a Bigfoot story for us?
Well, I have a comment.
Uh-huh.
My mother was very interested in the Yeti, the Bigfoot, whatever you want to call them. And there is also a South American Bigfoot, and they call it the Didi.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they wrote a story about it in the 30s, and it was made into a movie with Audrey Hepburn as the daughter of the Didi. So, but it isn't just a mystical creature. I believe that there are these creatures. And it's not possible, I don't think, for that many people all over the world to have seen these creatures and for not to be true. It's a big, ape-like, hairy creature in the Amazon called the Didi, D-I-D-I. And it also is a legend that it protects the other creatures of the forest from hunters. That's all I had to say.
Thank you so much, Michelle.
And that's a very similar description of Bigfoot and Sasquatch probably throughout the world.
Yeah, and just a reminder, going back to the Humboldt Martin, this idea of, you know, we haven't seen one, or we haven't gathered definitive proof. We thought the Humboldt Martin was extinct, and it was rediscovered. Mm-hmm. So we are discovering new species. It's possible that there is something out there that we haven't seen. Especially if it's intelligent and doesn't want to be seen.
Sure. And that's kind of what led out of this project of finding the site. Jamie had some game cameras, and after the 2012 expedition, we kind of started this game camera project. And he said, yeah, wouldn't that be cool to have game cameras down at the site running all the time? And at that time, lithium batteries were coming around, and We started putting lithium batteries in these cameras, and they would last in a whole year. So through crowdfunding, and our Bluff Creek project is a crowdfunded project. Most of our cameras were bought through, just online donations. And we put them out. We put the lithium batteries in, and those things will last a whole year. And they run 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. You know, they're out there doing the job that we wish we could go out and do all the time. But in this process, we've documented all kinds of animals in the Bluff Creek region.
Yeah. What is Bluff Creek home to besides maybe Bigfoot?
Bluff Creek. Well, Six Rivers National Forest has about 1 million acres, and it's a little sliver that starts in northern Mendocino, runs all the way up into southern Oregon, basically at the tip right there.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty steep terrain. It's pretty wild. And have you been up Six Rivers?
Yeah.
It's not highly visited, I should say. I took a reporter out. It was this year. Actually, it's 2019.
Last year, sure.
So I took a reporter out, and the whole time we're out, we didn't see anybody. And he couldn't believe that. He'd find it hard to believe that here we are in a Forest Service land, and you can't sing a single human being outside of us in the car. I says, well, yeah. I go, this is pretty wild country. It's not a big pool. It's not like a big recreation area that people go to, like a big reservoir. Hunting is the big thing for that. Outside of that, doesn't get a lot of visitation. And the Bluff Creek area, because of the Portorb for cedar, there's a fungus that attacks it and kills it. So about anywhere from 6 to 8 months a year, that area is closed off to public access. So you're talking about a large area that only gets visitors for about 4 to 5 months, and the rest of it's closed off from public access. And now you're talking about a whole drainage area on Bluff Creek itself that's pretty much a wild, steep area. So the chances of getting in there, it's hard to do it unless the gates are open. And the reason they have the gates is to keep the fungus from spreading. And it kills Portorb for, so we like to encourage people to honor the closures there.
Yeah, it's often spread by the tires, chewing up dirt,
correct,
and bringing it into a new area.
And up until 1958, really not too many humans had gone up into this region. In 1958 is when Jerry Crew was putting in some of the first roads to start logging this area, and that's where the famous word Bigfoot came from, was him... and his road crew coming back one day and finding disruption of their roadside and barrels thrown off into the creek and footprints all over the place.
Very cool.
So this guy went out and got a hold of a guy named Titmus and showed him how to make cast, and he went and made the cast, and that became where we got the word Bigfoot. It hit the Humboldt Times, I think, is what it was called
AP,
at the time.
1958.
Yeah, and it kind of spread all around. And so it is basically the birthplace of the word Bigfoot.
All right. We have Jen from McKinleyville on the line. Hey, Jen, what's your question?
Just really quickly, Jen will be on in just a second. We also had a Janice call in earlier from Eureka. Technical problem dropped her call, but she wanted to tell a story about how when she lived, I believe, near Klamath River, she heard some sort of undescribable sounds coming from the wilderness. It was kind of a high-pitched warbling sound. I don't know if I have that quite right, but Janice, if you want to call back, it's at 707-826-4805. Sorry about that, and here's Jen.
Hey, Jen.
Hi there. Hi. So this is kind of perfect timing. I think this is about the man you were just talking about, but I think about 15 years ago, a man who was credited with being the first person to talk about Bigfoot died. And one of my friends who's a tribal member said to me, she scoffed and said, Indians made up the Bigfoot story. That's not white people's thing. And I was wondering if you could speak to that at all.
Yeah, do we have any local tribal stories of some sort of a unknown creature in the woods?
Well, I'll take you back to the construction crew. That was...
Uh-oh, there we go.
I take back to the construction crew that was putting the road in. Once they started finding the tracks at the site, they lost a lot of their employees. They said, we're not going up there. They had a different name for it, YOLO, whatever it's called. Not doing it. Wild animal up there. Stay away from it. That's their people.
A lot of his crew was the from the tribe, the Hoopaw tribe. Uh-huh. And they knew what it was right when they showed up, and they said that was a sign of we're not supposed to be here. So most of his crew quit that day and never came back. And I think that's probably what stimulated Jerry Crew to take this a little bit further and take it serious and go get the prints and get the tracks and try to have some kind of investigation of what was going on. You know, why would half of his crew quit, and what could do these physical feats that happened on that site. So, but no, though, there's a lot of all the natives, all the First Nations tribes have a word for a supposed Bigfoot type creature. So,
all right. And if we have any local tribal members that have some of those stories, I'd love to hear them. Number is 826-4805. Give us a call.
I was just going to say there's a book called The Hoopa Project that is out. And what he did is he spent some time up in the Hoopa area, and he interviewed people and took their stories and wrote them down. So there's a lot of stories in the book called The Hoopa Project.
All right. Got to check that out. All right. We have another caller on the line, Tate. All right. Can
Hello.
You hear me? Hey, Tate.
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Do you have a story for us?
Tate is actually part of our Bluff Creek project, and he's done some filming work for us. But yeah, Tate is a new individual to the project, and he's put in a lot of effort. And I think you got a few stories, don't you, Tate?
Well, thank you, Tate.
Yeah, I mean, there was that one time we were camping. You were doing a little more investigation on it. We may have heard like a knock response could have been, you know, so that's good. And I had like, I heard I got a whoop a couple of times up there. Like my first time in July, like 2017, I think. So it's definitely a really cool area. You know, you never know. And like Robert said earlier, it's really rugged and there's not a lot of people out there. So you never know what you might run into or you might run into.
It takes a great example of enthusiasm in the Bigfoot world. He takes time every year to make sure he comes up, and he drives like 12 hours from L.A., and he's always the first one there and one of the last ones to leave. The excitement of just being out in the woods and maybe finding a Bigfoot or some evidence of him.
It's going to be a longer drive from Iowa to California.
That's a whole different story there.
All right. Well, next time you're out there, Tate, give us a call at Epic. I'd love to meet you. All right.
Oh, for sure.
All right, we're going to grab another caller while we still have some time. We're about at the half-hour mark, and we have two callers on the line. First, Russ. Russ, can you hear me? Do you have a good story about Bigfoot?
Yeah, well, I don't have a story about Bigfoot, but I have a question about Bigfoot hunters.
Yeah.
It looks like there's a whole new generation of people looking for Bigfoot. When I came to Humboldt in 1966... I made friends with a man named Jim McLaren, who was very serious about hunting Bigfoot. He invited me to spend the summer of 1967 going up in the mountains and looking for Bigfoot. Unfortunately, I had other things that I had to do, and so I didn't join him. But when I came back to Humboldt in 1970, I noticed that he had carved a Bigfoot statue in Willow Creek outside the Flame, the old Flame restaurant. I'd lost track of Jim, and I just wondered if any of your researchers have interviewed him and have any information on what happened to him. Thanks.
Thank you, Russ.
As Stephen Stoyford has talked to Jim, but he's not here to answer those questions with that. Stephen's more of our social animal when it comes to talking to people about different things. So
yeah, he's a great historian on the subject of the Patterson-Gimlin site and just the history of Bigfoot. And yes, Jim McLaren is a well-known name in the Bigfoot world.
And Stephen is the owner of Bigfoot Books. Is that what it's called?
Correct. Bigfoot Books in Willow Creek.
All right. Well, Stephen, I bet you're listening. Give us a call if you know of Jim. All right, and I think Janice is also on the line. Janice, I hope I'm seeing your name right. Let's hear your story. Can you hear me? All right, well, maybe she's dropped. Janice, if you have a story you'd like to tell, give us a call again at 826-4805.
Yeah, I just wanted to add the earlier caller about the Bigfoot research. He's right. It has changed a lot. Shows like Finding Bigfoot has brought the name commonplace in people's houses. As a researcher, has been doing this pretty much since 1999 myself, it kind of changes things. So you're out in the woods and you hear something. When the show shows you how to knock on a tree or how to scream or how to make a call, or how to do this, people are really into this. We have a whole new generation that's accepting it and embracing it and excited about it. So now you're out in the woods making all these calls, and you could be calling to another researcher or some kid that saw the show and is excited about it.
Right. And, you know, I think from the show, you'll be hard-pressed to find too many kids under the age of 15 that don't believe in Bigfoot. It seems to be a more accepted fact just because of the TV show. Not a fact, but, you know, it's definitely got more popularity the past 7 to 8 years from the show. And it seems like there's a couple movies every year coming out about Bigfoot now, whether they be comedy. Not too many of them been serious. There's been a few, but yeah. It's a popular subject right now, and it's definitely something that's kind of spurred us on. And again, I keep falling back to the witnesses. There's just too many people out there that I think are credible and have seen something. And just like your callers, that's what's hard to pass up right now. And that's what attracted us to this Patterson-Gimlin film site, because this is probably the best footage, or it's the best hoax ever, either way. But this is actual tangible stuff. This was shot on film, so it's actually a physical thing. It's not a digital copy. It hasn't been manipulated. So whatever it is, it's probably our best evidence still to date as far as visual, archival. And the site itself, just going out there, it is really far out there. You know, it takes a long time.
How do you get out there?
You go past Willow Creek, out 96, you take a right at Wichipec, and before you get to Orleans, there's a GO road, which was a road that was supposed to connect Gasky and Orleans, and they ran into some Indian, Native American, I should say, sacred land, and it kind of stopped the road. So this road goes out 36 miles and just ends. Now there's side roads that take you into Bluff Creek itself. And once you get on that road, you got another probably hour drive. And then you got to get to the site. You can only park about a mile and a quarter away from the site. And then you got to hike down into the site. And you kind of got to know where you're going. And through our project, we've made it very public on where the site is, the coordinates, and we've given maps and directions. So people that do want to go to the site can look up this information and get down to the place safely. Because of its remoteness, it's a place you don't want to get lost. You don't want to have an old car with bad tires, because there's not much cell service out there, if any, down in the bottoms. And it's just a rugged area. And like Robert was saying with a reporter, we've driven out there many times and never passed a soul and never seen anybody. But over the years, the popularity of the show and our Facebook site and our website, more people have gone to this, because this site itself is considered the mecca of Bigfooting, just because of the quality of the film itself and the stills that have been pulled out of it. But our project too is, you know, we're open sourced. We work with you guys, obviously Epic, and then we've also taken Forest Service down there. We've taken some administrators and some of the scientists that didn't know they had the site even in their lands, and there was a few that knew about it, but they didn't know where it was. So we took them down there because it is a tourist attraction in sense. And this project's kind of opened up and become something a little bit bigger. You were talking about, you know, the animals that we've discovered out there, not discovered, but that we've gotten on our cameras. You know, we've gotten thousands of bears. We've gotten a ringtail. We've gotten the fisher. We've gotten
Of mountain lion.
Oh yes, yeah. We followed actually a female mountain lion. She had two cubs, and over the years we saw them get bigger. And then I think it's probably been 2 or 3 years now. They finally have separated from her, so we don't see them all together anymore. But I think one of our first really good videos, because we like to set up our cameras in view sheds where we can get video instead of just snaps and pictures. And one of our first really good videos was a large, I think it was probably the female mountain lion, just strolling down this pathway that we've taken several times, you know, 45 seconds worth of really good footage, high definition footage. And that's really what's started spurring us on to put out more cameras and see what's out there. And I think that's what our project's about. It's more of a power of deduction. We're gonna figure out all the animals out there, whether Bigfoot walks in front of one of our cameras or not. That'd be great. But we've seen a lot of great things since then. So
yeah, we're not holding our breath on that one.
No.
All right. So we have Janice on the line. Janice, can you hear me now?
I can.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome.
So what's your story?
Well, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, I lived on a private ranch out on the Klamath that was along Alpaw Creek, just downriver from Blue Creek.
Yep.
And one night, it was pretty remote. We were surrounded by Yurok, Reservation and Simpson timber land. And so it's pretty remote, 5 miles off of the highway. And one night I heard this amazing sound that I have never heard in my entire lifetime. It was quite the whoop, 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 whoop kind of a really loud sound. And it was definitely not an elk or a lion or a bear or a fox or a coyote or anything that we've ever heard before. And by the time I got my little tiny reel-to-reel, you know, tape recorder out, it was kind of too late to hear it. But the neighbors up the way certainly heard it, and they shouted certain expletives at it and fired off their pistols, you know, trying to get it to go away because they were pretty scared, it sounded like. So was I. My heart was pounding pretty hard. But it was amazing. It sounded like it was right down the creek bed right below our house.
Well, thank you so much, Janice.
Yeah.
What's funny is that Apa Creek is the same spot that the government scientist who I was talking about at the beginning of the show reported his first sighting. So maybe that's a hot spot. Maybe that's another place for investigation by the Bluff Creek Project, the Apa Creek Project.
Yeah.
Yes, indeedy.
And that's just over the ridge, basically, from the Bluff Creek drainage area. We go up roads close to there that lead us up into Bluff Creek, just at Slate Creek Road and also Cedar Camp Road. It's another road.
Mm-hmm.
But you're talking about Umpqua, which is across the river, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Uh huh. Yeah. That's a whole another area out there, and as you know. You know, it is very steep out there. It's very large, and there's a lot of trees. I mean, there's places out there you can't even walk. It's just so thick.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of wildlife, too. And that's something I've noticed, I think, in our game camera project, is we've noticed a lot more wildlife starting to come in front of the cameras. It's changed a little bit. We've got a lot more deer, a lot more foxes. But, you know, the logging's decreased in those areas. And it's pretty neat. You were talking about Slate Creek. But you were talking about Slate Creek, just down from Slate Creek.
Blue Creek.
Yeah.
Just down from Blue Creek.
Blue. Oh, Blue Creek. Okay. Further up.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Blue Creek's closer to the Elk Valley drainage area.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's a great area, too. Yeah. That Elk Valley is the end of the Go Road, basically.
There's like 6 miles where the road hasn't been finished. You know, from Orleans to Gaski, and it all goes over, and there's 6 miles undeveloped, right on the edge of the wilderness area through there. Beautiful place.
All right. Well, I know where I'm going to go this summer. All right. Thank you so much, Janice.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And we have Stephen Stufert from Bigfoot Books on the line. Hey, Stephen.
Hello.
Hey, have you been listening?
Yeah, trying to listen online, but... it's spotty connection out here in the Bigfoot country.
All right. Well, we had a call-in from a questioner who was asking about a Jim. Do you remember the name?
Jim LeClaire.
Yes. Jim LeClaire, well, he was a student at Humboldt State University and had an interest in Bigfoot. So he would come out here a lot in the mid-60s just asking questions to the locals. You know, because since 1958, this place has been pretty much world famous as the Bigfoot central of the world. But, you know, in 67, he started sculpting for the town of this statue that we have on the corner of 96 and 299. And it's still an iconic image to this day. So like in 1999 or so, when I was done with graduate school at Humboldt, I started seeing this statue again on the side of the road, And it really got me thinking about when I was 10 years old and I saw all those Bigfoot documentaries and the In Search Of shows and stuff. That Jim McLaren statue still sits out there like an ambassador to the world. But when we were trying to find the film site in 2009, we had to interview just about everybody we could find who had anything to do with the history of this film that was shot up there, because the history is sort of an oral history, and it's blending with legends. You know, as the years go by, the story gets more and more elaborate, and the actual facts become more and more faint, buried in the past. I actually found Jim McLaren on Facebook, of all places, you know, because he had vanished from the Bigfoot research community a long time ago to pursue politics and his own scientific interests. But people even thought he may have passed away. But we found him. He's still living and prospering down in Ecuador doing a beetle research. He tries to find new species of beetles. But he had some interesting things to say, which turned out to be good, useful clues in finding the location. Because what a lot of people may not have picked up from this the show is that in 1964, there was this massive flood that you've probably heard of here locally that wiped out the whole basin of Bluff Creek. You know, there was a tight canyon, and the log jams that formed made big dams of water that burst through and blasted out all the trees and stuff down along the creek bed. So what you see there in the 67 film is a blasted out sandbar that's got really fine siltation and gravel along the flat surface of it. And since then, it's grown back into a jungle up there. So when we were looking for the film site, it was very hard to find the forest for the trees, as it were, the tree that we were looking for in the forest. You know, they all start to look the same. And when you're bushwhacking around, you can get lost in there really pretty easily and not see the film site, even though you're standing on it, which was what happened to us. You know, we finally had to settle on one location and dig up the artifacts from the forest debris, you know. And, you know, Jim McLaren's information on that was really good because he had certain memories of the site which described the location, and we were able to add that to the coffer of good accounts that might be true, you know. But since then, you know, he's still in my Facebook group. It's the Coalition for Critical Thinking and Bigfoot Research, and Jim McLaren has been in there recently telling some really interesting stories about his meeting Roger Patterson and so forth and so on.
All right. So if folks are interested, check out that Facebook group. So, Stephen, I'm glad you're on the line. So we have three folks now who can talk more about Bigfoot. So Bigfoot hunting often gets lumped into the broader world of paranormal weirdness, right? So from UFOs to telepathy and portals and whatnot. Does that bother you? You know, because you three, it seemed like you add a science element to it, or you add a skeptical perspective towards Bigfoot hunting. Does it bother you to be lumped in with, the crazies, for maybe for lack of a better word?
Well, it's easier to find information in the library.
Yeah.
Just go to that section and there it is. I don't always look at it. Everybody's entitled to their opinion on it. The more research I do, the more people I talk to, you start getting these two different groups in Bigfoot world. You have one group that believes in portals, Bigfoot talk, mind reading. You have the other group that's dependent on looking for actual blood, stool, hair samples. And they know each other. Some are even friends. But they also look at it differently. Like if one researcher can't find the physical evidence, they're willing to accept a different perspective. try to bring that closer to them to make a connection that they want to make. So they kind of meander that side of the fence. The other groups are still looking for blood and stool samples. They're on this side of the fence. Who's right? And you can yell at each other and call each other names all you want, but it's just right now it's just a different approach to the subject matters. And that's a very good question because nobody is an expert in the field. We think we're experts.
Science and humanity, we're always discovering new things, right?
Right.
And the universe is a very mysterious place, but that doesn't mean that just because something might be outside of the quote-unquote normal, that it's magical, you know? So our perspective, I mean, despite the fact that some of us believe more than others in our group about these weird things like ghosts or whatever, we take a perspective of investigating reality, you know? So we want to see what's really there. And along the way, we've learned a lot about the local environment, the botany, the geology, the hydrology, the logging history, the local people and all their stories, you know? And Bigfoot is something that comes out of the native culture, so we've interacted with them a lot. And it's just been very, very interesting to learn real things. You know, we know what wildlife is living up there because we see it on our cameras. You know, during those months when the Bluff Creek area is closed, there's no people up there. So if Bigfoot exists, he's welcome to come along and no one's going to bother him. But, you know, we found that Humboldt Martin up there because it's living there. You know, there's maybe only 100 of them left in the state, but they're prospering up there near, I won't say the exact location, but near the film site. And, you know, we hope that our observations can lead to more knowledge for a greater number of people about the real world. And, you know, if Bigfoot is a living creature, well, that's great. We would love to see it, you know. So far, since 2012, not a single Bigfoot has walked in front of our cameras.
Will you be disappointed if you don't ever get that proof?
No. We like to say that we're happy with the footage we have and the still images of the animals that we've found. You know, having that marten discovered, there are fewer of them than there would be of a living Bigfoot species, which would have to have more than 100 members to account for all of the nationwide sighting reports, you know. So it's a fun thing to watch a family of bear or mountain lion grow up and come back across our cameras after another year and another year goes by. And you still see those individuals up there. That's very interesting. And, you know, we record all the data we can. And we hope that this can at least contribute to scientific knowledge. You know, we've taken scientists and the Forest Service people up to the film site and shown them our operation up there, and everyone really loves the idea. And the Forest Service didn't even know where the film site was themselves. So we've contributed in that sense to establishing a sort of historical landmark, which we're trying to preserve so that it doesn't just disappear into the mists of history and forest overgrowth.
All right, so we have one last caller for tonight's show. Lenya, I hope I'm saying your name right, from McKinleyville. All right, Lenya, are you on the line?
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess I've been listening to the show, and I'm just, I wanted to call in. I feel like the last caller may have gotten at this a little bit in the conversation about kind of the real science versus the magic of it. But I guess the thing I'm curious about, I grew up in Trinity County in Hayfork, and in my town a lot of people believed in Bigfoot, and like in my own family we have some stories about Bigfoot. And but as I've gotten older and I'm kind of in the science community, and the part that I've grappled with Bigfoot is just what's the bigger picture of what we're all looking for when we think about Bigfoot? And I guess that magical, the magical realism of it, and just what's the larger do we just want to have something that's unknown to us that we can believe in and be interested in, and that is something we're not going to put our hands on and touch and see and validate scientifically, but more just what's that bigger, what are humans looking for in something like Bigfoot? I think those are universal themes, and that's why we see it all over the world, and that's why people have stories of it, and it's part of folklore. And I guess I'm just curious, with these people who spend a lot of time on it, what are your thoughts on that? And what's the bigger picture of what people are looking for in Bigfoot?
All right, Robert.
Yeah, we all have our different ideas of what we're doing. A good friend of mine who's really good with thermal, he is one of the first guys out there with the thermal. And once his friends found out what he did, he kind of got a little ridicule for it. But he's been pretty effective, and he's got some good thermal footage. I investigated one of his thermal sightings. Pretty convincing. But then again, it's just another, where's the body? But with that said, his goal is to prove beyond reasonable doubt that it's there, so he can prove that he was right. I'm in a field where I like the magic. I mean, not magic magician. I like having the fact that there's something out there I don't know anything about. I read these old stories, fairy tales, and you look at these, some of these prehistoric pictures of these creatures that are weird looking, but yet there's fossils of them. And part of me says, I really hope there is something out there like that, because the fascination, the mystery of it, just knowing there's something out there that is totally different and unique and scary. I like that. So when I'm hiking out at night by myself, and I'm hearing noises, I wonder, always ask myself, does it really do exist? Is that it right there? Or is that just some of the wildlife? So for me, I don't need to prove beyond reasonable doubt. For me, it's part of the experience, the adventure. I know there's things out there I can't explain, and I'm willing to accept that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a definite romance, you know, to this whole Bigfoot. And we don't like to use the word hunting.
That sounds a little violent.
It does. And to be honest, that's probably the only way this is ever going to be proven, is a hunter or somebody actually killing one or finding one on the side of the road. And I'm from what I see, just studying what I think could be a possible Bigfoot, it looks very human to me. And I'd hate to find out after somebody does kill one that it is a human, and that they committed murder. And there's plenty of stories of hunters that have had them in their sights and their scopes, and they just couldn't pull the trigger because it was too human-esque looking. The science and the magic of it kind of go hand in hand, hopefully, one day. But if we do discover one, and we discover where they are, my concerns, like with the Bluff Creek region, are that becomes a quarantined area, that there's a relic hominid that's extremely endangered living in this area. So I'm kind of mixed emotions on finding the definitive proof that they're actually out there.
Maybe it's an archetype of the human mind, I think, is what the caller is suggesting.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess what I'm saying, as someone who grew up in that area, and I actually, high school parties encountered people who were out looking for Bigfoot in my town, which is a very remote town, and it always struck me as a little bit strange, but I think as I've gotten older, I've thought, I think people are looking for some humility in being human and realizing we just don't, there's some mystery to life. And I like that, even though I can't say I believe that Bigfoot's out walking the woods. I do like that, we don't know everything, and there's some humility in that, and I really appreciate that. So
I think you could say that we often do, that the human race is almost incapable of living without that sense of mystery. And we really hate to think that we've discovered everything about nature, that it's all been logged, and Google Earth has seen every nook and cranny and cave. And we would prefer to have a world full of magic and wonder, like in childhood. But obviously we grow up and become somewhat cynical. But I think that the Bigfoot, it is like a living mystery in that sense. You can't dismiss the constant sighting reports that keep coming in from all over the place. Now, you could say Bigfoot isn't real and maybe these sighting reports are all wrong, but then you have an even greater mystery as to why when people go out into the woods, do they see these things or think they see them?
Well, Stephen,
why is that a living image for us?
We're going to have to leave it there. And I hope that everyone has enjoyed this show. And when you go out into nature, you will have a new sense of wonder and a new sense of excitement and magic as you walk through the woods listening for Bigfoot. So thank you all for joining us. And I'd like to thank my guests and everyone who's called in. This was a really fun show. Thank you all.
Thanks,
and this
Tom.
Has been Thursday Night Talk. My name is Tom Wheeler, and I'll see you in a month.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thanks to our host, Tom Wheeler, and our guests, Rowdy Kelly, Robert Leiderman, Stephen Stroyfert, who called in as a late guest, and all of our callers from our...